You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Dakota Wood is with us, Lieutenant Colonel in the United States Marine Corps, now retired, a man who served, among other things, as a strategic analyst for the Commandant of the United States Marine Corps. He was also assigned to the Secretary of Defense's highly regarded Office of Net Assessment these days. He is a senior research fellow specializing in defense programs at the Heritage Foundation and the lead author of the highly, highly acclaimed 2018 Index of U.S. Military Strength. So, Dakota, you've set the stage for us nicely about the overall problem, a C grade, as you call it, marginal capabilities. Let's look at each of the sort of major force components of the United States military in turn, starting with our ground forces. I mentioned, you know, there was a time when we were training with broomsticks and found ourselves having to throw whatever we had after a terrific drawdown in American military forces after World War II into the breach in Korea. We're looking at a very dangerous Korea at the moment and a lot more. How would you regard the condition of the United States Army and the land elements of the United States Marine Corps at the moment?
Right. So we assess the land services, the Marine Corps in particular, as weak, and I believe we have the Army as weak as well. And it's not an indictment of the quality of the individuals. You take a Marine or a soldier, they're just great Americans. And it's a testimony to their commitment that they're shouldering the burden that they are in so many far-flung areas with a lack of resources and dollars for training, et cetera. So we're talking at the service level. Do they have the capacity to conduct operations? Is their equipment modern or antiquated? And then are they given enough resources and using those appropriately to make sure that their services, that personnel are trained? Are they competent in what they're doing? Are they flying enough, shooting enough, maneuvering enough to have all those skill sets that they would need in high-end warfare? We didn't want to take just a snapshot of today because conditions change from one year to the next and, you know, competitors rise and fall. So we thought, you know, history has a lot of great lessons to teach us if we're just willing to look at it. So what has been the American experience at going to war, big war, since the end of World War II? I mean, you know, global conflict is out of the box, so it's not really a good reference point. But when you look at the major conflicts like Korea, Vietnam, Operation Desert Storm in 1991, and then even Iraqi Freedom in 2003, what we found was the U.S. military commits almost the exact same size force to these major competitions. And I think that has to do with just, you know, how much geography is involved, the economies that permit your competitor to field a certain size force, the impact of technology, et cetera. So it seems to kind of bound the problem. You know, you can only push so many brigades or so many aircraft into a certain region. And so what we found on the land forces side was across time, and you account for differences in force sizing structures, the Army commits about 21 brigades of combat power to a major conflict. The Marine Corps typically commits about 15 battalions. And so if I wanted the ability to handle two major conflicts, you know, being able to resolve one, actually fight one, and still have enough left over to deter opportunistic exploitation by a major competitor somewhere else in the world, then I double that. So for the Army, 21 times 2 is 42. And then we added in a 20% buffer, just because you're always going to have units in training, you want robust experimentation capabilities, you've got various bilateral agreements and presence missions that are going on. So that drove us to say that a two-war capacity Army would have 50 brigade combat teams. Today, they have 31. The 50 isn't unreasonable, because if you think back even as 5 years ago in 2012, the Army was trying to build the 48 brigades just to handle the sustained operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. And those were against irregular forces, no artillery, no armor, no air component, you know, that the Taliban or Iraqi insurgents were fielding, right? So these are irregular forces, and yet it took almost the totality of the U.S. Army to handle those sustained operations. So we recommend 50 based on history. The Army was trying to get to 48. They actually topped out at 45 when the Budget Control Act came in and arbitrarily reduced spending to his almost historic lows. So they topped at 45. And then since 2012, they dropped from 45 all the way down to 31. Out of those 31, only 10 are assessed as meaningfully ready in military skill sets, and only 3 of those 31 are in a fight tonight status. In other words, they could be deployed on short notice. So 3 out of 31. And then when you look at modernization on their equipment, you know, the Abrams main battle tank was introduced in the 1980s. It's been upgraded with a new gun on it, new optic systems and those kinds of things. But basically, it's the same engineered platform that was introduced in the early to mid-1980s. The Army has no plans, even on the drawing boards, for replacing that tank until many years from now. And the Chief of Staff of the Army has said that the Abrams will be a 70-year, that's 7-0, a 70-year tank, and its replacement won't be fully fielded until 2050. It's aging equipment that was introduced decades ago. It's historically small relative to the size of the world and the nature of threats challenging U.S. security interests. And it doesn't have the funding available to get its units through training rotations so that you have full spectrum readiness that you would want in the Army. And the same kind of issue applies to the Marine Corps. We would want to see 36 battalions. You know, if they habitually commit 15 to a major combat, double that, that's 30. 20% buffer will give you 36. For many, many years, they had 27 battalions. They're now, I think, down to 23. And of those, about a third are actually fully ready for combat action. So that gives you an idea of our land forces and where they're at in terms of capacity, capability, and readiness.
Now, it goes without saying, I think, to a professional like yourself, Dakota Wood, that the enemy understands very well what you've just described. I dare say that there's hardly an American outside of a small circle of people like yourself who've been serving or are currently serving who have the insight that you've just shared with us. It's staggering, but it's the worse if any, let alone all of the adversaries you spoke about in the previous segment, are aware that, you know, our equipment is approaching 40 years old and the amounts of the gear that we have that are actually ready to go tonight, as they say, is perilously small, and that the overall forces are inadequate and that the training is deficient. I mean, these have got to be red flags for the bull, aren't they not?
If we have had a criticism of the index, the criticism has been, why are we telling our enemies about the poor state of affairs in the U.S. military? And my response to that is, Moscow and Beijing and these other countries have legions of analysts who look at this stuff on a regular basis. All of our material is taken from open source, publicly available documents, the testimony provided by service leadership, acquisition documents for, you know, rationale for buying something, and then the funding documents about how many things you're actually going to buy. Everybody counts numbers. The International Institute for Strategic Studies, IISS, is an organization in the United Kingdom, and they publish an annual, basically a bean counter kind of book. And it's, you know, for all the countries in the world, how many tanks, how many airplanes, how many troops, etc. So none of this is secret information. We have just taken it all and put it into one place. Because to your point, if the American public isn't aware of the facts that our competitors are most certainly aware of, then how do we bring pressure to bear on Congress to make the proper prioritization of taxpayer dollars?
That is the question. We'll be right back with more with Dakota Wood to explore it specifically as it relates as well next to our naval forces right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.